John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us. No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan here with you this Wednesday evening, joined by Alex Daugherty of The Tennessean.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. I hope those of you listening to this didn't turn off the Predators game last night, because it was a doozy. The Nashville Predators rally from a 5-1 deficit in the second period to win 7-5 to wrap up their five-game homestand. The Predators have now won four consecutive games. The first time, Alex, in Predators history that they have rallied from a four-goal deficit to win a game.
Yeah, they had the Sharks right where they wanted them, down down four goals and ready to mount a comeback. Fedor Svechkov gets it going. Well, Tommy Novak got it going first, I guess, and then Svechkov, and then Justin Barron makes up for a very bad early turnover that led to a goal, and he gets a goal off a nice assist from Forsberg. And then the third period was just all Nashville, right? I mean, Jonathan Marchessault gets it going. Roman Josi ties the game. Nick Blankenberg puts him up. And then Forsberg continues the goal streak with a little empty netter. So, wow. It was, that was definitely feeling like a typical 24-25 Nashville Predators game, where they had a little bit of momentum from the previous three games and looked like they had turned the corner and their offense was going, and then all of a sudden the Sharks, who are below them in the standings, which is difficult to do, just kind of blew them out in the first period, and Nashville looked awful. And then just something clicked, and they started scoring. And, you have to say at least a little bit, like, the Sharks are not very good. So if that's another team, if they're playing someone else besides the Sharks, that probably doesn't happen. and if someone else besides Alexander Gorgiev is in net, maybe it doesn't happen, but yeah, it was that was quite an event to watch.
The Predators were 0-173 all time when down by four goals before winning on Tuesday. The game started not so well. Macklin Celebrini scores within the opening 65, 66 seconds thereabouts. Mm-hmm. It might have been the Sharks' first shot of the game.
It was the Sharks' first shot of the entire game.
It was the first shot of the entire game. Macklin Celebrini beats UC Saros clean as the Sharks take a 1-0 lead. And we're going to talk quite a bit about UC Saros on tonight's program. Then old friends Luke Cunningham and Mikhail Granlund get in the mix. They score twice in 14 seconds as the Sharks take a 3-0 lead. Tommy Novak cuts the lead to 3-1. But then Jake Walman scores on a bad turnover by Justin Barron. It's 4-1 after one. Mikhail Granlund scores on the power play early in the second period. It's 5-1. Admittedly, I thought, all right, well, they tried.
Yeah.
Let's see what else is on. But as I'm keeping track of the score, I see Fedor Svechkov scores. I see Justin Barron, as you said, redeems himself. He scores. Early in the third period, Jonathan Marchessault scores, and Marchessault has been on an absolute tear over the past month and a half. He scores. Roman Josi ties the game. Nick Blankenberg scores the game-winning goal. I've been, by the way, side note, I've been really impressed with Nick Blankenberg. I love how aggressive he is offensively.
Yeah, he's very solid, and he has a lot of the speed. He really kind of reminds you of like maybe a little bit like Ryan Ellis, like a little bit sort of just really good decision making, good recovery when he gets too far up, good offensive skills, good shooter. I mean, like he's been kind of amazing to watch.
So you had an interesting story at the Tennessean, Alex, talking about Roman Josi's game-tying goal and specifically the play that Ryan O'Reilly made, or I guess didn't make, leading to Roman Josi's goal. I would love for you to dive into that with us a little bit.
Yeah, that to me was, there's a lot, when you have a game with 12 goals in it in dramatic fashion, there's a lot of plays that can go unnoticed. By the way, just real quick side note, one of them being the video team alerting Andrew Brunette and the coaching staff to challenge the puck out of play from Luke Shin because it did deflect off of the wall or off of the partition and didn't result in a delay of game. So that was a huge play too. But the game tying goal from Roman Josi, there's two kind of things that happen at once that are just amazing. First of all, when the Sharks are going to clear it, Roman Josi comes out of nowhere to bat the puck back into play. A sort of non-traditional, play by an attacker to keep the puck in, but then the puck comes right to O'Reilly. If he touches it, a whistle blows the play dead for a hand pass. He knows that. He recognizes that immediately. He also recognizes that Jan Ruta is right there. He ties his stick up, holds him off so that Josi, the only person who's allowed to go get the puck now, can go get it. He collects it, and 7 seconds later, Josi just cranks home the game-tying goal. After the game, Andrew Brunette said it's just an example of how cerebral of a player Ryan O'Reilly is. Josi said, O'Reilly, you could watch him all game, and he makes all kinds of plays like that. It's just, in that moment, I thought that was just such an incredible, just veteran move that is so typical of what we've seen from Ryan O'Reilly the last couple of years.
One thing I was curious about, Alex, entering the game last night, and I had an opportunity to ask Andrew Brunette this question at the morning skate. The Predators have just finished a really tough stretch of games. They played the likes of the Dallas Stars, the Colorado Avalanche, the Winnipeg Jets on multiple occasions, the Minnesota Wild on multiple occasions, the Washington Capitals, the Vegas Golden Knights, the Carolina Hurricanes, the Los Angeles Kings. They've played a lot of really tough teams and played them well, and we'll get into that in the next segment. But the game last night started a stretch between now and the upcoming break for the Four Nation Faceoffs tournament in early February, where their schedule gets incredibly soft. The caliber of opponent that the Predators are going to be playing over the next couple of weeks pales in comparison to what they have been playing. They have a rematch with the Sharks on Thursday in San Jose. They play Anaheim on Saturday on the road. They come back home. They play Vancouver, which is just a mess. Yeah. They play Buffalo. They play Pittsburgh. They play Ottawa. They play Chicago again. They have an opportunity here, which we'll get into in a little bit. They have a unique opportunity here to get back into the mix. But I asked Andrew Brunette about, now that you're not playing these top teams, how do you make sure that the mindset stays the same now that you're playing opponents that are closer to you in the standings? Mm-hmm. And he did mention that there needs to be an adjustment of your mindset in that situation. And through 25 minutes of the game last night, I was thinking to myself, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
This was an opportunity for you to make up some ground, and you're losing 5-1 to the worst team in the league. But to their credit, they battled back hard. And I agree with you, Alex. If this had been any other team, it probably wouldn't have happened. It speaks to the relative weakness of the San Jose Sharks. But credit where credit is due. The Predators still had a lot to do to get back into that game, and they did.
Yeah, and not even just any other team. I really think the goaltending for San Jose was just particularly bad. I mean, Georgiev, that game time, the go-ahead goal for Blankenberg, great play by him, but it's just that really has no business going in the net. But, you know, it's interesting. So I was looking at the schedule too. Yeah, they have these more formidable or less formidable opponents coming up. But then look at what happens after they come back from the break. They've got all these, you know, they got San Jose and Anaheim and Buffalo, like you said. As soon as they come off cold from the break and they play the Avalanche, the Devils, the Panthers, and the Jets, all at home, but it's like a totally different scenario after that. So they get these opponents that they should beat, and then they have to immediately jump into the most competitive teams, especially with the Panthers, Avalanche, Jets, and like immediately continue it going, right? So that's why I kind of think, like, you know, they've got to get it. If they want to make a run here with all these teams they have in front of them, and before that break happens, it's got to be at least like they got to get at least within like 6 or 7 points of the playoff cut line in order to make it interesting. If they're not that close, it's just probably not going to happen.
When you look at the standings versus the Predators' upcoming schedule, so they have a rematch with the Sharks on Thursday. The Sharks, just in terms of points, are the worst team in the league. They're 32nd. Mm-hmm. Then they play the Anaheim Ducks. They're 28th in the NHL. The Predators, by the way, are 29th. They play Buffalo. Buffalo is 30th in the league. They play Chicago. They play Buffalo twice, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
They're 30th in the league. They play Chicago again. They're 31st in the league. Like, this is a really interesting stretch of time for the Predators. And when you mention the schedule after the Four Nations face-off, as well as the fact that they are going to take a two-week break,
yeah,
it kind of reminds me of what happened after the holiday break. The Predators went into the holiday break having won 4 of 6, beat some really good teams. They come out of that break and lost, what, 5 of 7?
Yeah.
So that break did not work out well for the Predators. I imagine the Predators wish that they could have played through Christmas, but even taking off 3 or 4 days stunted that momentum. So yeah, that's something to keep an eye on down the road. If the Predators play well up until that break, they come out of that break, which is about 2 weeks, and play these really good teams. It is an interesting way that the schedule breaks out. But I just want to highlight Jonathan Marchessault here. He has points in 17 of his past 18 games, dating to December 10th. He had 4 points last night, if I'm not mistaken. Points, yep, in 17 of his past 18 games. He has a 9-game point streak, which is a career high. So he had an 8-game point streak, went one game without a point, and then had points in 9 consecutive games. Yeah. You know, that December 10th date, by the way, is the day that the Predators put Marchessault with Steven Stamkos and Philip Forsberg for the first time in a game. I want to say it was against the Calgary Flames. And since that date, Marchessault is 11th in the league in points, 10 goals, 15 assists, 25 points. Philip Forsberg actually is 5th in the league in points since that date. 7 goals, 21 assists, 28 points. So if we look back at that game, December 10th, when that line was put together and the Predators do the miraculous and get back into the playoff race, the decision to put those three players together, it's basically the U2 trip all over again.
Yeah, it could be the thing that turned the season around. I would say that, you know, like, to maybe explain maybe what's going through the coach's head at that, you know, early in the season, like they obviously went into the season thinking, okay, we made all these changes, and they made them to create more of a balanced scoring attack, right? Where they had last year's top line with O'Reilly, Forsberg, Nyquist, and it was great. And then they just didn't have anything after that. And so they go into the season thinking, they'll keep the top line together, and then they'll just put Stamkos and Marchessault with Tommy Novak. And, you know, it just obviously didn't work. And then they tried Parsonen in there, and they may have tried Sissons at one point. They tried a lot of things. And then, you know, they even tried Stamkos as the center and with wings. And then it wasn't until that, you know, that O'Reilly got hurt against the Leafs, and they had to try Stamkos with the top line that they finally found it. So, like, now they're kind of back to where they were last time, where they have this one line that's just, like, churning out all kinds of points with Forsberg, Stamkos, and Marchessault. And while it would be ideal if they could find a way to balance them out and split them up a little bit, like if you could have a Forsberg and O'Reilly back together and they're doing good stuff, and then and then Stamkos and Marchessault are together, and so then you have two scoring lines, but they don't have that luxury. They've got to keep that line together, get as many points as you can out of them, and just hope that the rest of the lineup can find some scoring, which has been happening recently. I mean, like, you've had guys like Fedor Svechkov stepping up, and then, you know, Riley's chipping in, and it's just they have a lot going for them right now offensively, which was not the case earlier in the year.
Coming up next on Predators Insiders, I'm about to say a phrase that I know some Predators fans, might not want to hear. Have the Predators turned a corner? We'll discuss that next. Adam Vingan with Alex Daugherty tonight. This is Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan in with Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean tonight. The Predators are back in action tomorrow night in a rematch with the San Jose Sharks, this time at the Shark Tank, the SAP Center at San Jose. Puck drop at the ungodly hour of 9:30, pregame at 8:30, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. The Predators have won four in a row, Alex. Since December 12th, which was the game that the Predators won at Dallas to snap their eight-game winless streak, they are 10-6-1. So 10 wins in 17 games, points in 11 of 17. They have a points percentage of 6-1-8 since December 12th, which is the 10th best points percentage in the NHL. So as the Predators start to pick up wins, it leads to the inevitable question. Have they figured it out, finally? Have they turned a corner? And I pulled some numbers, and you have as well. Mm-hmm. I pulled some numbers since December 12th. Again, December 12th, the Predators win at Dallas. That ends the Predators' eight-game winless streak. I mentioned their record. They are 10-6-1 since that date. They have a points percentage of 6-1-8. Which is 10th in the NHL since that date. Here are some offensive numbers. Goals per game, simple. 3.35 over the past 17 games. That's fourth in the NHL. Mm-hmm. Expected goals per game. Shot quality in all situations. 3.6, also fourth in the NHL. 5-on-5 expected goals per game. 5-on-5 shot quality per game. 2.52, third.
This is since which date? I'm sorry?
This is from December 12th.
Okay.
So since the date that the Predators ended their eight-game winless streak by winning on the road at Dallas. So over the past month and change, the Predators are a top four team in goals per game, expected goals per game, and 5-on-5 expected goals per game. Uh-huh. So that speaks to shot quality. One of the issues that the Predators were having at the start of the season when they weren't winning a lot of games is their shot quality had fallen off of a cliff. Mm-hmm. At one point, 25, 30 games into the season, their shot quality per game was at the bottom of the league. It wasn't just that the Predators weren't scoring. It was that they weren't creating high-quality chances. So it wasn't just a matter of bad shooting luck. They weren't doing the right things to put themselves in position to score goals.
Yeah.
But now they are. In fact, they should be scoring more than they have. If you look at those numbers, again, 3.35 goals per game since December 12th. That's fourth. Expected goals, 3.6, which is also fourth. So the Predators are actually scoring a smidge less than they should be based on shot quality. Defensively, however, things are still a work in progress. They are 19th in goals against per game since December 12th. They are 23rd in expected goals against per game since December 12th, and they are 25th in 5-on-5 expected goals against per game since December 12th. So defensively, they still have some issues to iron out, and perhaps that speaks to what's been going on the back end, mm-hmm. some injuries on the back end and trying to find the right pairs.
And some goaltending that hasn't been stellar.
And we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But specifically offensively, this Predators team over the past 5-6 weeks is starting to look like the Predators team we all expected when they signed Steven Stamkos, when they signed Jonathan Marchessault. So better late than never, I guess?
Yeah, it, it's the old thing about process versus results, right? If your process is good and you're not getting results, you still march onward. If your process is good and your results are good, then you're sitting pretty. If your process is bad and your results are bad, then that's when the opening part of this season happens. It was bad process. It was bad results. They weren't generating much and they weren't scoring much. And it was just, that was horrible. Now, what you're seeing, as you described, is a good process. They're doing the things on the ice to generate goals and they're finally getting the results. And that is what when people talk about, is the season turning around? It probably is too late, right? I mean, like they dug themselves such a massive hole. I mean, think about like all the good that's happened in the last couple weeks. They're still like 17-22 in terms of their record. Like the record is still not good, and they're still way out of the playoff race. It's going to take like another several weeks of this in order to feel like they've actually turned it around. But when you have a team that is finally able to not just find the goals, but also like generate constant chances. And what, because also here's what happens. Like early on in the year, when the team was just struggling to find anything, and they were playing teams like the Oilers and like good teams like Tampa and the Oilers and Avalanche and the Kings and everybody who were confident and knew that the Predators just couldn't generate anything. They knew how to shut them down. They just knew, like, you frustrate a couple things, and then it's over. Now you have teams having to figure, okay, well, like Minnesota having to handle all the emotions that was going on, and then also having to stop an onslaught of goal scoring and offensive players like Forsberg and Stamkos. And so it's like it's sort of when the tide starts to turn, it doesn't turn in just one player or one line or one way. It's like all the things sort of start to steer in the right direction, and then all of a sudden you've got more confidence and you're playing better, and then that builds more confidence and that makes you play better. So it's like it's just this cyclical thing. It can, just as it can spiral downward, it can spiral up as well.
So I already made a U2 reference on this program, and I feel bad for making another one.
We can't do it, Adam.
I'm going to do it. I've already said it. I'm going to do it again. Predators fans who might think that the win last night could be this season's version of the canceled U2 trip last season. I went back and looked at where the Predators were in the standings last season, right before their franchise record 18-game point streak started. They were 4 points behind the St. Louis Blues for the second wildcard spot in the Western Conference, right before that 18-game point streak started. So they were right there. When this four-game winning streak started, the Predators were 16 points back of the Calgary Flames for the second wildcard spot. Today, they are 10 points behind Calgary for the second wildcard spot in the Western Conference. SportLogic gives the Predators a 2.2% chance of making the playoffs, despite winning four games in a row. So, although the Predators have found a groove, it's going to take a lot more than an 18-game point streak for them to get back in this race. There is a lot of ground that the Predators have to cover in a short period of time. As I said, last season, when that 18-game point streak started, they were 4 points back of a playoff spot. As of this morning, they are 10 points back of a playoff spot. I agree with you, Alex. If the Predators can get this to within single digits over the next couple of weeks and go into the break in February for the Four Nation Face-Off tournament within 6, maybe even 7 points of a playoff spot, that will intrigue me. If it's still double digits by the time that break rolls around,
yeah,
I think it's got to be highly unlikely.
Yeah, I always like to think about it. You know, you hear a lot about playoff percentage chance and all that stuff, and that people understand percentages like 5% versus 10%, whatever, but I also like to think about it in terms of the standings points, right? So, like, they're at 41 points. If you look back, pretty much the cutoff for making the playoffs in the Western Conference over the last several years has been around 95. Let's be conservative and say it's, like, 96 or 97. So, they need basically 56 more points in their final, what is it, 35 games left. Is that
where did you where did you say the cutoff was?
I'm putting it at around 97. So like
okay,
they,
so
they,
the Predators would need
56 points
in 36 games.
36 games. So 56 points would be 28 wins in their final 36 games.
They probably have to play a near perfect rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean it's like the 28 wins out of 36 games is like a really high standard of play for 2 months. I mean that's why the percentage is so low. Like even with these wins and even with the confidence they have, they just dug themselves such a big hole. It feels now
my quick math, by the way, says that's a 128 point pace over a full season,
which
56
would be like,
points
which would
over
be like
36
President's
games.
Trophy level. You
yes,
know, you know that would be an incredible run. And you know it's so it's like they don't have the luxury of really dropping almost anything. And you know there's a chance that they could sneak in at, you know, 97 points is not necessarily the cutoff. Like it could be 94. Maybe they sneak in at 94 and they could drop maybe another couple games. But you don't have any chance of. You certainly can't drop winnable games like the ones they have coming up. And now, if you host the Florida Panthers on home ice and lose to them in regulation, not the worst thing in the world. An Eastern Conference team, you're not competing with them for points in the Western Conference, and they're a good team, and you wouldn't feel bad about losing to them. But if they go to San Jose on Thursday and lose in regulation, if they lose to the Vancouver Canucks at home, who are competing with them ahead in the playoffs, that hurts your chances immensely. So, have they turned a corner? Offensively, they have, but in terms of their percentage of making the playoffs, I just don't see it yet.
I know that there are Predators fans who are listening to this right now and screaming at their radios or their 102.5, 106.3, the game app, however you're listening to this fine program, and you're screaming at your phone or your car, why do the Predators want to win and screw this up in terms of getting a number one pick? And I hear you. I heard Jared Stillman right after his interview with Barry Trotz yesterday at Bridgestone Arena say his fear is that the Predators are going to play well enough down the stretch to just miss the playoffs and blow their opportunity to have a high draft pick. And if you are a Predators fan who feels that way, I have absolutely no issue with that because the Predators have not had the opportunity to draft in the lottery very often. The last time they did it in a regular season was 2013 when they drafted Seth Jones with the fourth overall pick, if I'm recalling that correctly. They were in the draft lottery during the COVID playoffs because they lost in the qualifying round, and all teams that make the playoffs or lost in the qualifying round were included in the draft lottery. So they had small odds, but they were technically in the draft lottery.
I think they improved their position by like one or two spots.
That was the Alexei Lafreniere draft. Yeah. He went number one overall to the Rangers.
And they went from like 12 to 11 or something. Like they went up, the Predators, I mean.
I do hear you Predators fans that don't want the Predators to screw this up. Yeah. I'm here to tell you, I think they're going to.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to. I think they're going to make it interesting. I'm not sure how close they're going to get. But if you're a Predators fan who is concerned that the Predators will finish 5 points out of the playoffs and they'll be picking 12th in the draft, I'm here to tell you, I think your fears are realistic.
I think Barry Trotz is pretty clear about that he would much prefer build a culture of winning than try to go through some situation where he could get a top pick. He's very aware that this team has been through a lot in the last 5 or 6 years where they haven't been competitive and they haven't won a playoff round. And, not that they could do that this year, but I think he would just much prefer them actually just have some interesting games, you know, in late April, in early to mid April and push for a playoff spot. And if that means that they don't get a top draft pick now, I think he probably would say also, well, they already have a lot of draft picks. They have a lot of bites at the apple, so to speak, with 3 first-round picks and a couple second-round picks and, like, I don't know, 9 or 10 picks in the whole draft. They've got a lot of chance. I mean, they've got a lot of pieces. Are they screwing it up, as I think you described it? I guess if you're the guy that wants them to tank and try to get a top player like a James Higgins or Michael Mesa, then yeah, they're probably going to screw that up. But I think Barry Trotz is perfectly fine with that because he wants to try to win games and he wants to generate a culture of winning.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, is UC Saros okay? We'll discuss that next. Adam Vingan in with Alex Daugherty tonight. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan here with Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean tonight. Predators back in action tomorrow in a rematch against the San Jose Sharks, this time at the Tank in beautiful San Jose, California. Alex, last night, UC Saros starts the game, allows 4 goals on 8 shots, gets pulled. He allowed 2.76 goals above expected. It was a poor performance last night, no doubt, by UC Saros. And I'm sure you're hearing this as well, Alex. I feel like UC Saros he's drawn the ire of a lot of Predators fans this season, I feel like. His traditional numbers have not been great this season. We are used to UC Saros playing at a Vezina Trophy level. If you're just looking at save percentage and goals against average, it hasn't been that way. He is 11-18-6 on the season with a 2.81 goals against average and .902 save percentage. But I am of the mind that UC Saros, despite how poorly he performed last night, and let's not mince words, he was bad last night. I think that UC Saros, quite frankly, has been the least of this team's problems this season. If not for UC Saros early on, this team would be in an even bigger hole than they are right now. UC Saros, over the course of the season, has saved the Predators 10.8 goals above expected, which ranks 14th in the NHL among goaltenders. So not where he's usually sitting in these rankings, but last night notwithstanding, I haven't had a huge problem with the performance of UC Saros this season. What about you?
I think that it's just been, I think it's, if you combine, I think the problem is a couple of things. Like, combine last year with this year, and you've got now kind of a trend. Now, I know he finished fifth in Vezina voting because of the second half, right? But, like, his traditional stats, like his save percentage is well below. His save percentage last year and his save percentage this year are well below his career averages. And he's still, you know, he's still winning them some games that they should lose. But combine that with how he had played before all this contract stuff happened, especially how he was playing, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, right after Pecorine retired. It seems like there's, he's just not quite the same, and the looming 8-year contract that kicks in on July 1 is just, I think that's giving people a lot of worry, right? And he's about to go up to $7.74 million a year for 8 years with a no trade clause. Now, some people have suggested, like, well, you know, technically the Predators could try to trade him away before that happens on July 1. I certainly don't think that's going to happen because the whole thing with the Saros-Askarov thing last year was that he made his choice. He's keeping Saros. Now, if he trades Saros, it's like, well, then you did neither. you went the third option of, we got to find a new goaltender somewhere else, which would be a kind of a disaster and a terrible roster management. So they're going to keep Saros for 8 years. You just have to hope that this is like some sort of adjustment in the way he plays. Maybe he needs more rest. Maybe Eustace Onanen can be more of a 1B rather than just like a true number 2 backup. He's younger. That's good. But I guess I don't have a huge issue. He's been pulled from 3 games, and that's not, you know, unusual. I mean, goalies have bad games. That sometimes that happens. But I think it's just the plays that we're used to see him, we've gotten used to see him make, haven't been as consistent and haven't been as often, and that just amid all the losing is just compounding all of it. So
I think that's fair. And I was curious about how he performed this year relative to last season. So One way I look at this is a stat called quality start percentage. So a quality start, in the definition that I use, is any start in which a goaltender records a positive goals saved above expected. So last night, for example, was not a quality start. You don't need fancy stats to know that. You could just watch the game. But let's say UC Saros saves the Predators a goal in a start based on the expected numbers. That is a quality start. UC Saros has made 36 starts this season. 22 of them qualify as a quality start. 22 of 36. That is a quality start percentage of 61.1%. Last season, he had a quality start percentage of 56.3%. He made 36 quality starts and 64 total starts. So he's performing better in that regard this season versus last season. I think an issue with Saros this season, particularly early in the season, is the fact that he wasn't getting a lot of goal support. So I just shared with you his quality start numbers. So UC Saros, again, has made 22 quality starts this season. His record in those games is 11-9-2. So 500. He's won 11 of his quality starts, and he's lost 11 of his quality starts. Let me share with you some numbers of some other top goaltenders in terms of their quality starts and their wins and losses in those. Jake Oettinger of the Dallas Stars has 25 quality starts. The Stars are 20. He is 21-4 in those 25 quality starts. Connor Hellebuck has 24 quality starts. He is 21-2-1 in those 24 quality starts. Logan Thompson of the Washington Capitals has 22 quality starts. He is 19-1-2 in those 22 quality starts. Igor Shesterkin, even, who has come on strong lately, but has struggled early in the season with the Rangers, he has 21 quality starts. He's 13-8 in those starts. So UC Saros has a 500 record, 11-9-2, when making a quality start. That says to me it's an issue with goal support.
It's the team. Yeah.
It's the team. Yeah. Look, he has a part to play in this. I am not absolving UC Saros of blame of what we've seen this season. But I think it is unfair to pin it all on him, or the Predators shouldn't have signed him. They should have kept Yaroslav Askarov, which is a whole other topic we'll discuss before the end of the show. But again, 22 quality starts, 11 wins. That says to me that in those starts, he's doing what he needs to do. The team has not helped him.
Yeah, and also, the Predators' penalty kill, which isn't number one anymore. I think it's like number six or seven. It's dropped off a little bit, but it's still a very good penalty kill. He's a big reason why. If you look at his penalty kill numbers, when the team is on the penalty kill, his numbers improve in terms of the goals saved above expected. So he is definitely, when the going gets tough, as they say, he's stepping up in that situation. It's just like the 5-on-5 stuff. Like he gives up some goals from outside that he just should be seeing. The normal UC Saros problem spots are still there. He can get beat on the short on his blocker side high. I mean, he's usually pretty good with his glove, but he's not like excellent at it. He's very good laterally. He's always been good at that, and that's great. You can see him moving side to side very well. But I do think that they just I agree with you that the his record and the quality start suggests it's the team stat. It's just this franchise gets so used to seeing goaltenders just saving the bacon all the time, and when you don't see it, it gives you this feeling like, oh well, maybe he's not the guy. I still think he's going to be a very solid goaltender over these next 8 years, or at least the next 3 or 4 years. Who knows what will happen on the back end of the contract, but he's in incredible shape. He's healthy. He's doing all that. But what will happen in a few years when his normal skills and normal strengths start to wane?
That is a good question. And look, I remember over the summer, it became like a Twilight feud. What was it? Team Edward and team. Like, why am I forgetting the other person from Twilight? Why the fact that they even remember Team Edward is kind of impressive, to be honest with you.
But Jacob!
Jacob.
I'm sorry, Nick Kieser.
There we go.
Nick Kieser would read Twilight, nerd.
No,
never
liked it.
Anyway, it was Team Yaroslav, Team UC. That's where Predators fans were. And I personally was on the side of Team Askarov, but not for the reasons that we're discussing. My reasons were cap-related. If you have a starting goaltender, like a starting quarterback in the NFL on a rookie deal, if you have a starting goaltender on an entry-level deal, you can build the team in other ways around that goaltender. And I just thought that this town wasn't big enough for the both of them. The contract situations did not line up as perfectly as they did when UC Saros arrived and Pecorine was nearing the end of his career. It just didn't work out that way.
It was like 3 or 4 years off what it should have been.
Right. So I was actually on Team Askarov, but not because I didn't like UC Saros as a goaltender. I just thought contractually, cap-wise, age-wise, I thought it made more sense to go with Askarov. The Predators made the decision to go with Saros. And Saros has not been his usual Vezina caliber self this season, but I also don't think he has been helped by the fact that this team in front of him for most of the season hasn't played well, hasn't given him the goal support. Didn't happen last night at the start of that game. Yesterday was a bad game, no doubt about it. But overall, you know, I think UC Saros, if I'm listing the reasons why this Predator season is the way it is, he's not anywhere near the top of that list.
No, I wouldn't say he was at the top. I would put it maybe closer to the top than it sounds like you would, but
Sounds like it.
I don't think he's in the top five. I mean, he's not in the top five in terms of problems with this team this year. So,
coming up next, we did not get this matchup last night, but the Predators and Sharks will have a rematch tomorrow in San Jose. Could we finally get UC Saros versus Yaroslav Askarov? I sure hope so. We'll discuss that next. Adam Vingan here with Alex Daugherty tonight on Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan, Alex Daugherty here with you. Predators are back in action tomorrow night against the same San Jose Sharks they defeated 7-5 last night. Puck drop at 9:30. Pre-game at 8:30. Right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Get all the caffeine you need and stay up with us as the Predators face off against the Sharks once again. Alex, we were deprived of great theater last night other than the game itself. It would have been even better had it been UC Saros versus Yaroslav Askarov, but Askarov played on Monday in Boston, so Alexander Georgiev played for the Sharks last night. I am hopeful that Askarov will be in net tomorrow against his old team, because I love the drama. Mm-hmm. Askarov, Saros, one-on-one. Well, it's not really one-on-one, but we'll all talk about it like it is one-on-one. By the way, I mentioned quality start percentage earlier when talking about UC Saros. Yaroslav Askarov actually leads the league in quality start percentage. 8 of his 9 starts are quality starts, 88.9%. He has been quite good for the San Jose Sharks. His record does not reflect that, but he has been quite good for the San Jose Sharks. So we touched on this a little bit in the previous segment, Alex, but looking back on the Askarov-Saros saga from over the summer, have your feelings on it changed at all in hindsight?
Well, do you mean, like, did they make the right decision? Is that what you mean?
You could go there, just where you thought things were going to go over the summer?
I think that The way that it all played out, I think it was really unfortunate that they had to deal him. But the guy was, you know, the guy wanted to play now, and now he is playing. And I think it's just, I think I go back to like the timing of everything was just like, it was just like 3 years off. If UC Saros is 30 or 29 when they draft Askarov, it would be perfect, because then Saros would be kind of done with his career, and or at least close to it, like Rene was, and then you go right into it. But it just wasn't close enough, and then also the fact that Askarov was such a high profile player that could come into the league and play like a 22 year old or whatever he is now. I'm very excited about this. I mean, I was when you looked at the schedule and you knew that they were going to play these back-to-back against San Jose, which is very strange that they did that. And you wonder, it makes you think, like, did the league maybe think that it could be a possibility? Because I've never seen this where they have they host San Jose or a West Coast team and then fly back out 2 days later and go play that same team in their home barn, unless it's the playoffs. And so it's very strange. But and then last night when Gorgiev was letting in a lot of goals, I was like, oh no, are they going to replace him in net and we're going to get a Skarov now? I'm glad they didn't, so that we can set up the potential return. And Skarov is just like, he's a very entertaining person, right? He's a really entertaining goalie, and in a lot of ways, like on the ice, off the ice, he's been known to drop some language in the post game before, and I wouldn't be surprised, win or loss, if we hear that again, maybe even before the game. You never know. And he wasn't real public with the trade request with Barry Trotz. Like, I mean, obviously he went through his agent for that, and that was planned, of course. But I wouldn't be shocked if we get some sort of like, yeah, I want to show this team, you know, what they traded away, and that I can beat them and show them, prove them wrong.
I bet he wants to bench press the goalpost. That's what he wants to do,
yeah,
right?
I mean, that would be ideal, right?
Does he do that only after a shootout? Okay.
That's what he's done, yeah. And then, but also, like, you know, he's going to come out and play the puck, you know, a couple times. I wouldn't be surprised if he does that. He's done that this year with San Jose, like in the NHL, and that's going to be fun to see what happens there. Maybe there's a little, maybe we have a goalie fight. What if we have a goalie fight between Saros and Askarov?
I can't imagine you see Saros in a fight in any capacity. Whether off the ice, on the ice, he is too nice of a guy to do that.
I can't see. I mean, maybe Askarov would do it. He did go after one guy in the AHL.
I could see Askarov doing it. I'm not sure I could see Saros doing it, but that isn't to say I don't wish it could possibly.
When Askarov got into a fight, by the way, he got absolutely decked. I mean, it was terrible. So if he does fight,
so he must have learned his lesson.
Yeah, he was well out of his reach too. It was against the Texas Stars. I remember I actually grabbed someone's video and tweeted it. So if he does get into a fracas at some point in time, I just don't think he has it in him to win a fight. Honestly, he has the reach, but I don't think the strength really bodes well for him whatsoever.
So. If I'm hopeful to be pronouncing this correctly, Remy Poirier. That is the goaltender that Yaroslav Askarov fought in the American League for the Texas Stars, of course, the AHL affiliate of the Dallas Stars. But I am interested to see Askarov in that. I haven't watched him too much this season. I'm not staying up late to watch Sharks games normally. I have many other things I'd rather be doing, but I will be watching the game tomorrow night, of course, Predators and Sharks Part 2, Electric Boogaloo. In San Jose, after the Predators rally from four down for the first time in Predators history, a four-goal comeback win last night to defeat the San Jose Sharks 7-5 at Bridgestone Arena to wrap up the homestand and take a four-game winning streak on the road after the Predators face the Sharks on Thursday. They play the Anaheim Ducks on Saturday at the Honda Center before returning home for a matchup against the Vancouver Canucks on Wednesday at Bridgestone Arena. Alex, great stuff as always, my friend. Thank you for joining me tonight on Preds Insiders. Alex does not want to say goodbye.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got distracted. Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun, and I'm really anxious to hear more takes on the Team Jacob situation with old Nick Kieser over here.
Yes, you and Kieser can have a thoughtful conversation about Twilight after the program. You had such a good time, you were speechless there for a moment. For Alex Daugherty and Twilight superfan Nick Kieser, this is Adam Vingan. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.